The Guardian. Hello, I'm Rosie Swash, and this is Music Weekly from The Guardian. Coming up today, American alt-rockers and National tell us about adding fun to their sound and dealing with stage fright.
We wanted something less tightly wound and stately or whatever his boxer was.
There's Kano, Scissor Sisters and Rat-A-Tat in Singles Club, and Prince Sinner in the studio to talk about their time living in London and the influence of English intellectuals, the Bloomsbury Group. They'll also be playing an exclusive live track for us.
It occurred to me that I had been living in the exact same neighborhood that Maynard Kent had been living in, so it was better for me to write about someone who, like, I knew his neighborhood a little.
Well, Alexis is still on holiday, but fear not, Alex Needham from guardian.co.uk/culture is here. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. We haven't really talked about Tim Jones's wedding. How did you think my DJ set went down? it's the main question.
I thought it went down very well. I thought also the best man was interspersing some of Morrissey's famous comments about Tim playing a risky game, but it went down quite well.
I think it went over a lot of people's heads, myself included, because I was quite drunk. And making his first pod appearance of 2010, it's Will Dean.
Hello, Rosie.
From The Guide. I didn't know until I read the script that you haven't been on here for about 6 months.
I was unaware also, but I've been waiting for the call. And as soon as I got it, I've been up here waiting for 2 days.
And so you're off to interview Yesaya this afternoon, is that right?
I am. We're going to try and do something fun with them and get them to review their own reviews,
which
could either be really good or they'll probably just sort of go, well, we don't want to.
One fact I can't get over about Yesaya is that one of them put in Kanye West's shelves.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
I think it might have been the singer. But he's obviously, like, was a decorator to the stars before he was, well, or even while he was in the band. But I reckon you should ask
That's
him about
brilliant.
That.
Didn't one of the Arctic Monkeys used to be a bricky or something, he used to come down to London for the week.
The one that they kicked out the band.
Oh, was that him?
Yeah, I think so.
Well,
maybe you should maybe you should ask Yesaya to review some shelves. We never know. All right, let's move on to our first interview. High Violet is the fifth album by Brooklyn-based, Ohio-raised band The National. With a cult following for the last 10 years, the band enjoyed a more mainstream status in the States with their vocal support of Barack Obama during his election campaign, even providing one of the tracks which soundtracked his victory speech in Chicago. I caught up with singer Matt Berninger from The National earlier to talk about the new album. Whereas some bands start with their best work and struggle later on, I think High Violet is where The National have gelled the most, and I asked Matt if he agreed with me.
I do think, in a way, for whatever reason, we are the reverse of what most bands, go through. You're right, there's, like, most bands have this like, lightning caught in a bottle at the beginning of their career, and they just make these magical, innovative, exciting things early on, and then they start to, kind of peter out. And we started, without much of a spark. It just kind of slowly bubbled up. I think now we are a more innovative version of ourselves. I mean, we sound like ourselves. It's not like we're reinventing anything. But I think we're doing more interesting things and having more fun with music and bending our own boundaries a little bit. Better now than certainly, when we started 10 years ago. And I honestly do think that each of our records has been better than the one before. And it's not because suddenly we're all these, like, great ideas are starting to pop up. I think we're just really working hard and investing in it, and we just really are passionate about it. So this record took a long time because we were just looking down every little pathway and trying to discover new things, and so a lot of it's sweat and persistence, more than it is sparks of genius. And I can fall asleep without a limb. It takes a while to settle down. I think it was you
you, Matt, in an interview around the time of the Boxer, said, you know, whenever we've had these big notions or these ideas about what we want to do with an album, it never quite works out. Mm-hmm. So did you take a step back from that for this album and you know, actively try not to have any idea about what it should be?
Well, I mean, when we started this one, we had some... Granted, all of our ideas of what it might be were all very different from each other. So, yeah, that's one of the main reasons why the record will never end up being what we thought it was or what we wanted to go for in the beginning. I also think we've all just kind of realized that you're searching in the dark for things that you haven't seen before or things that you've never heard before. And so you have no idea what that stuff's going to be like. It's not like you're searching around for something, for, you know, a diamond ring. You don't know if what you're going to find is a human head or a pizza or whatever. I'm going down annoying metaphor lane, but I just say, I know with this record, we had the idea of it being, at one point I said happy, and that was probably didn't go that way at all, but fun. It was definitely something, we wanted something less tightly wound and stately or whatever as Boxer was, and I think we wanted this release, and I do think the record, it's very dark, but the themes are, there's a lot of stuff about fear, there's a lot of crazy ugly moments, and I think there's a lot of funny moments, but you know, it's a sinister, bleak landscape in some of the themes, but I think that's also a very pleasurable thing. I do think it's a very fun record. I mean, the song Sorrow, yeah, it's about a person's relationship with their own sadness, but it's a really fun song to sing. Sympathy, 'cause I don't want to get over you. I don't want to get over you.
I've read that you suffer from stage fright. Is that true?
I mean, I don't know what clinically stage fright feels like, but I do can tell you that there's stage anxiety, you know? And this is the anxiety it's social anxiety. It's the same kind of anxiety when you're at a crowded, you know, in a crowded room at a party and you just feel awkward. And it's an awkward thing to do and place to be, you know, on a stage under lights in front of a bunch of people. And it's exhilarating and it's funny, but it's also very embarrassing, and I love it, but I'm not comfortable, you know. It's like one of those things, there's a big difference between feeling excited and feeling good and feeling and being comfortable, you know. So it's this weird kind of duality of terror and delight, I guess. I defend my family with my own umbrella. I'm afraid of everyone. I'm afraid of everyone. With my shiny new star, spangled tennis shoes on. I'm afraid of everyone. I'm afraid of everyone. With my kid on my Matt Berninger of The National there, talking to me a little bit earlier. Alex, I was talking to a manager, an artist manager, at the weekend about various bands of recent, like The National, Animal Collective, or another one, American bands whose presence has grown so much more later in their careers, and they've had a good solid, you know, 5-10 albums out or something like that. And he was saying he thinks it's easier to exist under the radar in America because America is so big that the divide between the underground and the mainstream is quite distinct in a way that it kind of maybe isn't in the UK, and that a band like The National can survive very, very healthily on what might be considered a cult following, because a cult following in America is so much bigger. Do you think that's one of the reasons why there's a bit more buzz around this album?
I don't know. Well, In the case of Animal Collective, I think it's that they started off making quite obscure records, and then this one's more kind of commercial, I guess. They sort of learnt, they kind of decided to do tunes. And I think to some extent that might be the case with the National as well. Then again, they're in a very kind of American tradition, aren't they, of sort of like a Bruce Springsteen kind of thing, where it is quite normal to sort of have a slow burn and to learn your craft. They've got that really sort of American kind of authenticity that is quite antithetical to a big sort of flash in the pan. So I can sort of see why that's worked for them.
I really like this album, but then I've always had a soft spot for the National. And I think that one of the things I've always felt when I've enjoyed them is there's a slight part of me that thinks, is this a bit naff? You know, is the heavy, heavy sadness and super emotion of the music, if that was an English band doing it, would I be able to buy it as much? Will, what do you think?
I'm not sure if it is that emotional. I mean, the thing that stuck out for me in that interview was him talking about the bleakness of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not quite Joy Division. Obviously, the voice is quite similar to the baritone, but it doesn't seem sad. It kind of seems more... One of the notes I made when I was listening to the album was just Cormac McCarthy, that kind of, you know, that broken barrenness, and that's what you get from the sound of his voice. And there's a track, is it Bluesbud, Ohio? Mm-hmm. Ohio Bluesbud? where you get that. And I always think, having listened to Boxer a lot, I expect them to be not boring, but not to find myself taken away with them. I sort of don't want to think this is a band I really want to invest in emotionally, but stuff like Fake Empire, which still goes around in my head to this day, it's that catchy little bit. I want to find them boring, but they're really captivating, and I'm not quite sure why that is, but I think it's that kind of dark, existentialism you can hear in it.
Mm. I mean, in a way, they've sort of taken the atmosphere and sort of sounds of something like Godspeed You Black Emperor and kind of made a sort of a more conventional rock
super
song
accessible version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... And you know, things like the Arcade Fire have, you know, they're not kind of a million miles away from that. So it's not like we're unused to this sound. Again, you know, people have kind of compared them to Elbow in this country. And I can see they would have a sort of similar constituency of fans, you know, where people who like very kind of emotional, in a way, sort of quite male rock music.
So does the album work for you guys?
Well, I think they're after something that has a kind of real cumulative effect, you know, that is all of a piece. I guess that's why they didn't sort of they probably didn't add that on. I can kind of admire it more than I enjoy it personally. It's not my sort of thing particularly, but I mean, their live shows are meant to be like these incredible sort of revivalist meetings where people really go for it, and also they kind of launch themselves into the audience. So I'd definitely like to see them, that dimension to them.
Yeah, I really liked it, and like Boxer, I can see myself going back into it just in drips and drabs over there next sort of year or two.
All right. Well, High Violet by The National is out now. Singles Club now, the section where we each put forward a current or future single up for discussion. And we're going to kick things off with Alex's choice. Now the city blacks out the sun, but you know is rising. You can show me the work that you've done. Been disguising. That was Fire With Fire, the new single by Sister Sisters. Alex, this is your choice.
Well, I sort of brought it in for discussion because I'm not quite sure what I think about this single yet. It's quite a tricky time for Sister Sisters. They've come back with their difficult third album, which I think they recorded a couple of times. They scrapped one in the middle of it. I really like their first album, but obviously that's quite a long time ago now, 2004 it came out. Then the second one I wasn't keen on at all. Although it's sold very well, but I think there's a bit of a feel. I think there's a bit of a feeling now that it wasn't all that it could have been. So now they're at a bit of a crossroads. This is the first time they've not produced their own records. They got Stuart Price to do it, who obviously is most famous for doing Madonna's Confessions on a Dance Floor. The Killers also, he did their last album. They put out a web-only single, Invisible Light, which I thought was really good and that showed their kind of sleazier side. But this is quite a conventional sort of Elton John-tinged thing. Mm. I think I like all of it except for the chorus. There's a very good middle bit. But I don't know whether it feels a little bit sort of obvious to me. And I actually think people like Scissor Sisters when they are a bit more sleazy and dirty.
Absolutely.
I think maybe they should have stuck with their with the web-only single.
My issue with them as a band has always been when they camp it up a little bit too much. Like, I really hated Take Your Mama Out Tonight. Really, really, like, and it was always on the radio when it came out, and it really got under my skin. But their version of Comfortably Numb was, you know, it managed almost not darker than the original, but it revealed in them a real darkness and understanding of a side, sort of darker side of culture, and it wasn't kitsch at all. And I really liked that. And this to me it's like they've gone away for a few years and they've come back and crystallised all the things about Scissor Sisters that I don't like in one track. It doesn't work for me. Will, what do you think?
I completely forgot about Comfortably. I once fell out with someone by telling, he was quite a serious Pink Floyd fan, that the Scissor Sisters version was better than
I do like it more
the Pink Floyd version. Furious.
I can't say it.
You can tell I've obviously done lots of research because I didn't realise that Stuart Price had produced it and I actually heard a lot of the Killers in that kind of
Las Vegas
stadium rock that they had on the last album, but that was a bit sort of more dancey. Like the cross point between Sam's Town and the third record. Also, it reminded me a little bit of Alphabeat, which is odd because obviously they have been influenced by the Scissor Sisters. I don't know if they've gone back to that or Alphabeat crystallised that sound a bit better.
Mm.
And like Alex says, they've kind of gone past the point. And I was always intrigued by them and found them a lot of fun when, you know, with the earlier songs, when it was a bit more kind of gritty rather than the songs that you kind of hear every week on Same Difference doing them on X Factor, and you just kind of think, nope, that is enough, and you know, that is, I've heard that enough on Capital Radio. But you know, it's kind of fun.
I just feel like they've lost their way. What do you think, Alex?
I was sort of reminded of them watching this documentary about Soft Cell last week. When they sort of said that Soft Cell kind of, you know, originally were an arty sort of sleazy band, and then they kind of came on, did Tainted Love, and also in their first rush of success, you know, they managed to have a run of five really good singles, and it seemed obvious. But then when the sort of success kicked in and they got a bit blown off course by it, then, you know, you start second-guessing what you're doing, and it all becomes a lot more difficult. And I do think a slight kind of self-consciousness has maybe set in with Scissor Sisters. I mean, originally they were sort of an electroclash group. I mean, it was kind of between the sort of early singles and their first album that they kind of turned into a rock band. I think this album sort of sees them trying to get back to what they were before, but as well, there's still the pressure to sell a lot of records. It's a bit of a trap that bands sometimes fall in.
Let us know what you think. That was Fire With Fire by the Scissor Sisters. It will feature on the new Nightwork album, which is out on June 28th.
Great sleeve as well.
It is a great sleeve. It's a very, very good sleeve.
It's a dancer, I think, called Peter Green. It's a close-up of his bottom.
Okay, well, that seems like a good time to move on to Will's choice. That was Party With Children by Rat-At-At. Will?
I think you're going to say Rat-At-At.
Rat-At-At. Will, tell us why you like Rat-At-At.
Rat-At-At, another band that have sort of been creeping around for, this is their fourth album, cunningly called LP4. Their last one was LP3. But the first one's not called LP1 or LP2, really. I got into them at LP3 and just found them a great artist just to have on in the background. And that's not to say their background music, but it's that kind of that otherworldly kind of meow is sort of a nice, interesting sound. And I think that they've said that they're not interested in American sounds. They self-consciously try not to do blues and rock.
Although they are from, they're from Brooklyn, of course.
And they went to, I think they're from upstate New York, so they're kind of like liberal arts college kids who met and, you know, swapped MacBooks and samples and things. I don't know how it works. They sound very French, which is something that, you know, they've had to say to them, oh, you know, you sound sort of more that sort of Daft Punk and that Ed Banger sort of post that movement rather than what we sort of associate with Brooklyn and all the sort of, you know, the more the national kind of sounds. So there's no vocals, but just lots of really sort of fun sounds and weird bits of noises. They had like a parrot in the studio when they were recording. His parrot's called Fellini.
Fellini the parrot.
Yeah, and so
I've always liked his work.
They played weird noises to him, and he was sort of flapped around in the studio, and that, you know, stuff like that goes into it, which is a bit soody, but it, you know, it makes for a really good sound.
Well, I think they always feel like they could make bangers. They definitely straddle that ground between the Ed Banger stuff and Daft Punk, and also I think the fashion for what people were calling math rock a few years ago, like it felt like perhaps 2007 might have been the perfect time for them, because they tapped into all these different things and it never quite came off. And I wonder whether that's largely because they're vocalists, you know, it's a lot of instrumentals. Alex, are you a fan?
Well, I didn't hate it, but it seems a bit.
It's always a good start.
It just seems a bit pointless. I mean, it's kind of quite, you know, they use obviously sort of dated sound, you know, the same ones that Daft Punk sort of brought back in Discovery, and in a way, that's quite a well-worn sort of template of sounds now. It's sort of been, you know, it's been running through music as an undercurrent for about the last 10 years. I don't know. There's that parrot in the video. Rather, it's a budgie, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a white budgie.
I don't think it's a video around, actually, but that is one of the videos on YouTube. Just saw the bird dancing to it.
Yeah, and apparently they're good performers, but I just wonder what the overall purpose is. Is it just we do what we do, and if anybody else likes it, it's a bonus, or are they really trying to move people emotionally? I just couldn't get a handle on it, really, and maybe that is because there wasn't any singing. Although, you know, there's plenty of instrumental dance music that we like, yeah. But it just didn't have anything that really pulled me in.
All right, well, that's Party with Children. It can be found on LP4 by Ratatat, which will be in the shops from June 8th. And now it's time for my track. Hey, I pull up in a tinsel black. Black shades, black this, black that. Call it a gashmobile. Big MW, black man wheels. Big and runner dude, ooh, can't trouble, ooh. King Semidega with a well-known, got a crew. Rolled in a club with a fresh hot stunner too. I got a cheddar and a bread and a butter too. Ladies like me, I'm so icy. Pull up to the club, boom, vibey. Got my glass on, shades on like Spike Lee. Chinese ladies, I'm your light G. Yeah, I'm so cool like night breeze. Give my white tees, fresh pair of Nikes. Club full of ladies, tight speeds. Gotta get one right now, in an hour, my flight leaves. That was Get Wild by Kano featuring Adonia and Wiley. That's my song, despite the use of the line, call it the Gashmobile, which obviously as a feminist I have huge issues with, even if it did make me laugh. I picked this track because Kano's a funny one. He's always been the most obvious choice for the success. He was always the obvious choice for the successful grime MC, partly because he's very good looking, partly because he's often accused of rapping in a slightly American accent, so it seems like that might work. And he's never really struck me as someone that knows where he's going with his music. And so Dizzy obviously made a conscious decision to go super pop, and Wiley kind of followed on from that and has been doing the electro stuff. And for a while, Kano was doing the same thing, and his last track, which I believe was called Rock and Roller, was him almost singing. It was like auto-tuned. It was really, really horrible. It was like really unpleasant. It was like someone sort of taking the piss out of where the rest of the grime MCs have gone. So when I saw that he'd got a new track out, I had really low expectations for it, but I think this is absolutely brilliant. It's much more, you know, it sounds like something that Major Lazer were doing. It's much more in keeping with that. It's produced by Boys Noise, who's a fidget house, German fidget house DJ. And it's obviously, so it's got that in it. And then it's obviously got the more dance hall influence in it. I have no objection to grime MCs making the more commercial stuff that we've heard, like the Roll Deep single that was at number one. You know, it's palatable, it works. It sells records, and if it means that every so often those MCs can go off and make tracks like this, then I'd be very pleased, because I just think this is brilliant. Alex, did you like it?
I liked it a lot, yeah. It's interesting that they did it in Berlin, isn't it? Not really a grime stronghold, but obviously where Boys' Noise is from. But yeah, I thought of all the records we've heard today, it's the one that's had the most kind of excitement and adrenaline to it. You know, they sort of sound
like... more than the National?
Well, it does sound like they've got something to say, and there's something quite vital about it. Funnily enough, we're almost at a stage, I think, in music generally, where we were kind of 10 years ago, in that guitar music doesn't quite seem to know where it's going. We've got a lot of bands like the National around who are sort of catering to the kind of older end, but the sound of youth again seems to be pop and R&B, and I think this record's a really good example of that.
Will, as someone who would know what the sound of youth is,
unlike me. I loved it as well. I thought that xylophone was really sinister. I don't think I've ever heard such sinister. A sinister xylophone, a word which I had to look up the spelling of earlier. Thought it began with a Z. So yeah, I'm obviously the voice of youth who can't spell.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I like the fierceness of it as well. I mean, was London Town his last big hit?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of assumed naively in 2007 that would kind of be the apogee of grime, that single doing really well. And I really like that. And having gone back to it, I'd forgotten how fierce it is, especially when what happened after that with, you know, Dizzy and Wiley going a bit pop, and then Wiley coming back, and then Wiley going over there to electro, and then coming back here to this song. And I think he's really good at this as well. So yeah, two thumbs up.
Get Wild by Kano featuring Adonia and Wiley is out now, and that's your lot for Singles Club this week. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave feedback for us. So let's have a look at what was posted about last week's show, shall we? On our Khalees interview, One Friday has posted the album is Gennaro Electro Rubbish, but it's enjoyable Gennaro Electro Rubbish, and she has a voice to carry it. Mungle Funk is less complimentary. On what day did the Lord create Khalees, and couldn't he have rested on that day also?
Oh, Mungle Funk.
Oh, Mungle Funk, that's so you. Lucius on the Andrea Triana interview and live track writes, I do love the podcast. However, as with most critics of any art form, what you typically rave on about, I find to be total rubbish and absolutely love what you don't fancy. I will take Andrea Triana over Beyonce any day. Maybe there's not a huge market for that kind of music in the UK, but there certainly is here in the States. Our favourite Ellie Moose chips in. I'm not so cut up over our lack of easily classified as soul singers. It's just not very English to vocally flounce around on joylessly obvious chords. We got soul. We just mumble, growl and whisper it. Well, that's great. Thanks as ever for all your feedback, and keep it coming in, please. Next up, it's Indie Poppers, Princeton. The band are actually from California, but they used to study in London, and their first release was called the Bloomsbury EP, which was where they used to live. The debut album Cocoon of Love came out last year, and you can hear my interview with Jesse and Matt Kivel from the band, they're twins by the way, after a track from the album. This is Shout It Out. We stare at the speakers strong, lights shining bright. Name, the band name, is not a reference to the college, which I'm sure a lot of people mistake.
That is true.
Where does it come from?
Well, me and my brother Matt grew up on Princeton Street in Santa Monica. We're all from Santa Monica, so many years ago when we were coming up with a band name, me, Matt, and Ben decided on Princeton, and we were just like, oh, we don't hate this, so let's use it.
So you've been, how long have you been playing together as a band?
Well, we've been playing with Ben ever since we were little, when we started playing guitar. So we were like 14 or 15. I mean, I've known Ben since first grade, known David probably a few years later, just we weren't really friendly because he's a couple years younger than us. Our freshman year of college, I'd say, or the end of high school is when we started using the name Princeton, but it wasn't really a serious project for the first 4 years. We just would like come home over the summer, record a little bit and play like one show, But then we were all studying abroad in London our junior year and played out here to mixed reviews. No, I just don't think anyone was at the shows. Actually, I'm positive no one was at them because I was there.
Presumably your period in London was the inspiration for the Bloomsbury EP?
It obviously had something. I think it was not necessarily influential, but I think it was indicative of our interest in like British culture in general, the fact that we decided to study abroad in London. But I think that our interest in the Bloomsbury group and like me with Keynes and Jesse with Virginia Woolf, those were interests that were kind of cultivated outside of I think it was actually after I got back from London I started being more interested, and then it occurred to me that I had been living in the exact same neighborhood that Maynard Keynes had been living in. So then I think we had a similar perspective, and it was better for me to write about someone who, like, I knew his neighborhood a little.
How does the neighborhood compare to what you imagined it would be? What was it like when you were living there?
It's a lot like how I would imagine it to be. The hardest part to imagine is the lifestyles that they were leading actually taking place in that area of London now. Because in the 20s, that was a cheaper area. And not to say that these people didn't have money, they did, but there was sort of a bohemian lifestyle that it was an like upper class bohemian lifestyle that they had sort of invented in that area. And all these interesting things were happening, like parties and readings and things in the neighborhood in Bloomsbury. And like now you go there and it's like so quiet. It's just, it's a place where a lot of rich older people are living and not doing those sort of innovative intellectual things.
So which of your songs are you going to play for us today?
Well, I don't know. It's so many to choose from. We're actually going to play a new song called This Weather a Swimmer, which we're definitely going to record for our next record. I don't want to guarantee anyone that it's going to be on it, but it's going to be here.
Brilliant. Take it away.
It's kind of exclusive.
As a dream, it got harder. shoes off in autumn. I had caught all a catch, but my friends were impressed, so I walked out inside just to find you. The morning of the day of my life, I said goodbye. Colors rearranged in my mind as I said goodbye.
Was Princeton playing This Weather Is Swimmer. I first came across them on MySpace, and the first single that I listened to on their MySpace page is called Calypso Gold, and it's quite Afro-poppy. So a combination of that and their name made me assume that they were some kind of Vampire Weekend bandwagon jumping crowd.
Polo shirt wearing.
And I feel bad about that, because actually that's not what their output is like at all. And as I was saying, Princeton, they've known each other for years, and Princeton's been their band name for a long time, and it's where they, you know, the street they grew up on. It's nothing to do with some sort of Ivy League imagery. So I, you know, I feel bad about that. And I thought that was an absolutely beautiful tune, not to sound too cliched. Nice summery tune. Alex, are you a fan?
I enjoyed that. They sound like Gorky's Zygotic Monkey. A bit. That's what it reminded me of. But I don't know. I mean,
that's far away from Vampire Weekend.
True. Although, I mean, they do have certain things in common. So maybe it's in the zeitgeist. Mm. But I mean, I like the idea of them coming over and writing a pop record about, well, they did an EP, didn't they, about the Bloomsbury group. I'm trying to think of any other artists, any other pop stars that talked about the Bloomsbury group. Morrissey has surely mentioned. Yeah. Actually, yeah, the Smiths did a song called Shakespeare's Sister, didn't they? Famous Virginia Woolf essay. But apart from that, I can't really think of any more.
Will, what are your thoughts on Princeton?
I quite liked it. I mean, it would have been an incredibly douchey thing to do if they had actually been Princeton grads.
So, don't shout about it.
Fair enough. it was nice. The song we just heard sort of had that really nice waltzy kind of quality, and it reminded me of stuff like Rah Rah Riot and that sort of Fortuna pop group. Nice sort of marching band element to it, and kind of classical pop sounds. One of their tracks on MySpace sounds like Frankie Valli's Sherry Baby, which has Meredith from Music Got Music In. It's,
you're a big Music Got Music fan.
I think I'm the only one, unfortunately.
I'm their fan, yes, that's me.
Yeah, I'm the fan base.
Okay, well, Princeton's album, Cocoon of Love, is out now. That's all for this week's show. My thanks to Alex Needham for joining us.
Cheers.
And to Will Dean for also joining us.
Thank you, Rosie. See you in 2011.
Yeah. Thanks to producer Pete. Alexis resumes presenter duties next week, but I'll be here too, so I hope you'll join us then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.